Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our 11 o'clock hour. Writer Akiko Bush joins us to tell us about her new book, From the Mill Pond to the Sea, One River, Three Tributaries, Four Dams. It's a personal narrative that considers the ecological, social, and human interests around dams in New York's Hudson River Valley. 67 tributaries flow into the Hudson River watershed, and over half are impeded by some 1,600-plus dams, vestiges of early American infrastructure. Most have outlived their purposes. Bush says they restrict biodiversity, obstruct fish migration, raise the temperature of impounded water, and trap sediment, creating artificial flow patterns. Focusing on four key sites in the watershed, from the Mill Pond to the sea, advocates for their removal and the reconnection of free-flowing waterways, and in doing so considers three options: maintenance, neglect, and removal. Again, the name of the book is From the Mill Pond to the Sea, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Akiko Bush to the roundtable. What a delight to have you back on the program. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
I love having you here, and I love talking about this. This is a little bit out of your normal thought, isn't it?
Well, not really. One thing leads to another, and it kind of came about naturally. It's interesting how it started. It started in the spring of 2020, and I had been working on something called the NRI, which is the Natural Resources Inventory, which is the document towns use for management and planning.
Yep.
And so it's you look at species, habitat, soil content, geology, just the environmental features of a given area. But because at the same time, COVID-19 came upon us and there was a lockdown from the pandemic, I found, perhaps not surprisingly, that it was the connectedness of waterways that most engaged me and that most kind of brought my imagination to life, right? So I was sitting there, with my cursor tracing these threads of blue and green across the screen of my laptop, looking at these waterways. But what I realized in real life is that so many of these streams were fragmented by barriers, by dams, and they were, these barriers that were stopping, affecting sedimentation, affecting temperature, stopping fish passage, and having all kinds of detrimental effects to the ecology. So I got interested in that.
So who oversees that? Who looks at that and says, okay, sort of the leg bone connected to the hip bone, but oh, by the way, there's this in the way.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, there's no easy or quick answer to that. I mean, a lot of these small low head dams that were, maybe used for ice ponds for refrigeration, they're privately owned. So it's really left up to the private landowner to do something about it. Larger ones are owned by municipalities. So it really depends on where they are and, who owns them and what the funding is. And there's no any single path, right? I mean, it's very expensive to bring a dam down, more expensive to maintain one, but each one has its own story. And one of the things I found that was really interesting to me was this idea that connectivity, reconnecting waterways, doesn't follow the logical progression you might think, right? You might think it starts at the mouth and you move in a kind of, logical sequence,
right,
Upstream. No, it doesn't work that way. You can start, and this is a really great idea that I think has application elsewhere in our lives, is connectivity can start anywhere. You can start at the mouth. You can start at the headwater. You can start anywhere in between. Bringing down dams happens when it can, where it can, where the funding is and the community support is and the political support is and people are ready to do it. So, when you're writing about water, I don't mean to get too schmaltzy, but when you're writing about water, you're writing about life, right? I mean, it's
sure,
just inevitable. And so this idea of connectivity, being able to start anywhere, was something that that I really came to value.
So it can start anywhere, and,
yeah,
and we can start with it anywhere.
Yeah.
But then that has an effect on the other, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The other meaning...
The other avenues for the water to go.
Right. Well, the main idea is that it goes downstream to the river and out to the sea. That's, you know, hence the title of the book. But yeah, I mean, as I say, you can begin anywhere, and you know,
I guess what I'm asking, so it can begin anywhere, but what you also seem to be describing in the book is that it can begin anywhere, but also, it is not being done in other places. So if it's not cohesive, does it really work the way it should?
It would work better if they all came down pretty quickly all at once, but that's not the way, you know, that's not the way ecological change happens. So the main thing is it is happening here and there. And, you know, I think ecologists are fond of saying, all dams will come down. Sooner or later, they will come down. And it happens not necessarily in a logical way you might expect, but there is this kind of nascent crusade now to bring them down.
Maintenance, neglect, removal. Talk about those.
Yeah, well, those are the three different options you have. The other thing that got me really interested in this whole process is that I live in the Hudson Valley in a small town, and there was a dam that breached, you know, that same spring when I was kind of working on all of this. And this archaic dam that had been in place for a mill came down. It breached in the foundation, so the dam was still there. But within a matter of hours, a day or two, the entire pond, this beautiful mill pond, had breached. The water was streaming out from the foundation, beneath the foundation. And what you were left with was this kind of mud bank. But amazingly, this mud bank was also a seed bank, right? So it started, there were a lot of seeds in there, mostly native grasses. So very quickly it turned into a kind of a grassy field, and then trees were planted, and you know, this point 6 years later, it is on its way to becoming a woodland, right? There are oaks and sycamores and maples, and it calls into question this idea of how we find beauty in the natural world. I mean, there's something really beautiful about a pond, you know, a reflective pond. You kind of walk around it. There's a sense of composure. There's a sense of contemplation that kind of quiets the human spirit. But there's also something about watching that being replaced by this kind of curving, meandering stream and a growing woodland, which is much more ecologically healthy. And so watching that transformation take place over the years has been revelatory, yeah.
So kudos to you, because what you've done in the book is you focus on basically four sites.
Yep.
And that really helps us focus on this. What went into identifying those particular sites?
Oh, gosh. A couple of them were local. They were ones I knew about. The one I just mentioned that had breached, that was breached basically through neglect. There's another one just down the road from us that's being maintained because it's part of a town park, you know, and people love the pond and they walk around it and they have their wedding pictures taken there. And, you know, there's this kind of nostalgic attraction to it. So that's being maintained even though it's in pretty bad condition. And then I knew the people I've been working with at the DEC told me about a dam upstream that had, on the Wappinger Creek, that had been taken down systematically in 2016 and was kind of exhibit A in successful dam removal. And it was a kind of clogged stream with that had been for years had served as that kind of age-old traditional function of the stream being the garbage dump, right? So all kinds of debris had collected at the dam and was pushing it. Anyway, now it is. That's all gone. The dam is gone. It's a free-flowing stream, and there are fish there.
When you say a dam is in pretty bad shape, give us an example of what that looks like.
Oh, that can mean so many different things. Often it means what's happening at the foundation. There's sediment that's collected there, and it's pushing at the foundation. So the dam, you know, may look okay at the face, but there's water streaming underneath. Other times it's just the debris piling up there that's pushing against it. I mean, some of these you have to understand are, you know, they're over 200 years old. They weren't built to, and especially with weather patterns we have today with more extreme storms, that's a problem.
Well, Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I don't want to get to ahead of myself here, but I mean, that's another huge issue is what's happening. There's the ecology, but then there's also what's happening to the planet in general.
Yeah, well, there's a safety issue, of course. But one of the things I found, and this was really interesting to me, something else. You know, as I say, you write about water and you keep finding you're writing about something bigger than you thought. You know, it was this idea of connectivity and reconnecting these waterways, because I think so many times when you're talking about ecology or the way we treat the environment, left to our own devices, we do the wrong thing, right? We put all the toxins out there. We poison the environment. We excess consumption. You know, we just do the wrong thing so many times. But I think also as human beings, we have a kind of social impulse, instinct to connect, right? We search out we search out connection, whether it's personal connection or social connection, but we know intuitively that social connection is vital to human health. And what I came to, try to believe and to hope is that relying on this instinct, you know, it's one of those rare moments when doing what comes naturally to us can also serve the environment. And, you know, it's one of those moments when our native instincts can perhaps be put to good use.
You're talking about our native instincts. And I just want to talk also just for a moment about our negative bad instincts, which also seem to be, and an old time an environmental engineer told me that people think over and over and over again that you can move water. And that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Like you can play God and say, okay, we're gonna make, instead of this stream going south, we're gonna make it go north.
Yeah, you know, that's I think that's a pretty outdated way of approaching it. I mean, a woman I talked to at some length, Laura Wildman, went to school as an engineer. She studied as an engineer. And she talks about, you know, when she started, engineering rivers was about moving water the way you're talking about.
Right.
Now it's much more about river restoration. We've come to realize that. So when you're talking about dam removal, the conversation tends to be about restoration and not re-engineering flow.
But that's really the point, is that we can't, right? I mean, we can't re-engineer it as much as we can allow it to do what it's supposed to, of where it was intended to go.
Yeah, that's true. I think people involved in that kind of river restoration now around removing these barriers, you know, you kind of have to look into the future as well as the past. You know, how was it built? Where was it built? Where was it sited? And what's it going to do? Where's the floodplain? What's going to happen when you bring down the barrier?
How did the barriers get there? I mean, in general?
Well, I mean, in general, they're archaic dams that were built to power an emerging nation, right? I mean, there's sawmills and timber mills and textile mills and cider mills and, you know, all of this. But, you know, none of these are serving that purpose anymore. So they're just there kind of clogging the waterways and preventing fish passage. So they're not they're really not serving, in the Hudson River watershed, not serving much of a purpose.
So if you have a small private lake, and there is a dam there that it is looked at as what is controlling the water, the flow, as well as the rise and the fall of the water.
Let me just jump in here. I think that most of these archaic dams are not doing much to control water. They're kind of blocking the water, but few of them are used for hydraulic control.
So I guess what I mean is that, you know, when people say, oh, the lake is much too low, we need to address that, or it's much too high, we need to address that. And whose decision is that? Who has that, especially in a private situation?
Well, I don't think that really happens all that much in privately owned dams. I think in larger dams, especially in urban areas, you know, say Newburgh, you know, there's you know, those are municipal decisions, and you just, you know, you just hope that the board, the city board, or whoever it is working with engineers who are, and they usually are, who are kind of clued into river restoration.
With the book, what do you hope we get out of it? A call to what action?
Just recognizing the beauty of reconnecting waterways and flowing water. I mean, one of the things I found when I was researching this is that, you know, there are two different kinds of water, right? Aquatic biologists think in terms of lentic, still water, pools and ponds and lakes, and lotic water, flowing water, streams and tributaries and rivers. Yeah. And what I found, or what I like to think, is that the human imagination has those corollaries, right? We all love the pond. We all love the composure and the reflection that the pond brings to us. But at the same time, there's something about the urgency and momentum and energy and dynamism of moving water that speaks to our imagination as well. And I think it's that latter, that kind of healthy running water, that I would like us all to value more.
I'm afraid to say we're out of time, but a wonderful conversation. The name of the book, From the Mill Pond to the Sea, One River, Three Tributaries, Four Dams. The book is beautifully published by Excelsior Editions and is authored by Akiko Bush. What a pleasure to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. I love being here.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, From the Mill Pond to the Sea. The book is published by Excelsior Editions. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.